All right, we're going to hit record, and if you're a participant in the subscription or downloading, before we get started, see, every time you touch your computer, there's clicking and clacking.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay, I'll try and be very careful about that. All right.
Dan Duran is back in Toronto. Fred's still in the Dominican. I'm all by myself in Mexico.
Yes. Oh, you saw how poignant.
That's right, Freddie. And we're playing this for several reasons to start the show, because I was just informed by my friend, Friedrich, that this artist has just passed away.
Yes, Eric Carmen, 74 years young. Okay, young. But he's out of his misery anyway.
That's right. That's the humble and Fred upside to death. Well, at least he won't have to go on with this pointless existence. You know, they say that a lot of people get into music and maybe even entertainment and whatever to get chicks. You know, that's what we used to say. Did he think this was going to get him chicks? All right, Eric. Just pick it up a bit. Yeah.
Was this his response to Alone Again Naturally, or was Alone Again Naturally a response to this song? Two dismally depressing songs.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, I think they came out around the same time. And it's like one of them, for most people know Gilbert's, whatever his name is, Gilbert Sullivan's Alone Again Naturally. It's like one of them heard the other and went, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, I can bum you out way worse than that. Wait till you hear this dirge.
That was the Depression era of music.
Yeah, along around the same time in the mid-70s when Terry Jacks had that song Seasons in the Sun.
Oh, yeah.
Where's Girlfriend Dies. Anyway,
Where's
Dan Duran.
Gun, please.
Dan Duran is back in Toronto. He doesn't have all his radio equipment. I was going to say he doesn't have his equipment, but he doesn't go anywhere without it.
Yeah.
So, Dan, let's give a little mic check for the people.
Well, this is it here. And my apologies. I didn't think this part through. I mean, I thought a lot of this stuff through for the vacation thing. But on the arrival, I usually have my studio is in a little kind of case that I carry around. But I left that back in at Lisa's house. So I packed my bag up there, put the professional microphone I was using yesterday in my luggage. But there's more gear required when you're not, when you have your own little system set up, and I didn't bring it all.
Well, listen, man.
So my apologies.
Not at all. You've got the kind of voice that cuts through no matter what you do. I miss you already, but I will tell you just a very quick story. I dropped Dan. We left for the airport around 4-ish, and usually I've done this run a couple times now. My kids, my buddy Grant. The airport drop-off and home for me is about 2 hours, and I've done it so many times where you sort of don't have to really think about it anymore, or so I thought. So I dropped Dan off around 5:30, and Dan, I came out of the airport, and it's just a simple, merge to the left, and that takes you to the signs that say Cancun and Playa del Carmen, which is south of the airport. And for some reason, I missed that, and I headed north of the airport, Dan. The city of Cancun is a city of about 1 million people. I'm not talking about where the hotels are and the beaches. I'm talking about the actual city. Dan, I was going to try and message you. I got caught up in a traffic jam. It took me 2 hours and 15 minutes to get home because I had to head. I had to head north. I got home at 7:45. I was going to message you and say, have you taken off yet? Because I literally just got home. The whole thing took 3 hours. And about 40 minutes.
And what should that trip normally be, did you say?
2 hours. 2 hours.
But one way is an hour, right?
One way is an hour.
Right.
And it was all my fault. I mean, the traffic jam was a big, big accident, or as Freddie would say, esclimage. But being in, I should never have been going in that direction. So, I just listened to an episode of Smartless, and I thought, okay, well. Let that be a lesson to you, old timer. Pay more attention.
Hey, that's right. And the new Howard, the car, not damaged at all. Like the dashboard or the steering wheel or the face of the radio, the front of the radio. It's all fine. None of it's cracked or smashed or anything.
Just my fragile psyche. But Dan got in late, and so he hasn't had much sleep. So why don't we get the show underway so, you know, poor Daniel doesn't... you go have a little... listen, let's start the show, and I'll talk to Fred about how many naps a day you have.
This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Puerto Aventuras, Mexico, from our well-equipped Dominican Republic facility with Muskoka chairs on a sandy ocean beachfront, and from Humble and Fred headquarters that has no studio equipment, and is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. And now here are two men who thought that the beauty of their winter locations would calm and soothe their spirits, except for the incessant squawking of the jungle birds and rude tourists. It's Humble and Fred.
And always a pleasure to have Bill Brio with us today. The guy's a television writing superstar. I looked at his notes. He, like myself, watched the Oscars and quite enjoyed it. And anyway, we'll get into all that. One of the things I did wanted to mention is I didn't realize, or maybe I did, but forgot that Ryan Gosling was Canadian.
You forgot that, did you?
Well, also forgot that we talked about Paul Giamatti's dad about 10 times, apparently, so.
Yeah, I saw a thing yesterday. Maybe you did, too. Somebody sent it to us. I can't remember. Ryan Gosling, when he was about 12 or 11 years old, when he first latched onto the Mickey Mouse Club or whatever it was. And you could just feel that, you know, he had talent back then. He was quite the dancer, or is quite the dancer.
Well, that movie he was in with Emma Stone, wasn't it La La Land?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Dan and I were looking up how much money he makes per a movie yesterday. He made $12.5 million for Barbie. And I think both of us, Dan and I, confirm or deny, Dan, we were disappointed that he didn't get more money from the billion-dollar, you know, Barbie made $1.4 billion. Do you know that, Mr. Patterson?
No. Wouldn't he have some kind of... piecework on that?
That's what we thought. We said, hey, where's the back end for Ryan Gosling?
That's what we said, but well, apparently no.
No?
Well, we did some research, Fred, over lunch, so.
Well, I'm surprised that someone of his stature now wouldn't... Doesn't that just sort of come with the deal now, usually?
That's what we thought. But I wanted to quickly get to something that Dan and I experienced. I'm using the Canadian angle as the segue, Dan. I think you know where I'm going. Okay.
No, I don't. Sorry, I've had 3 hours sleep.
Yeah, I know. He's
very tired.
He's very tired. Mm. On one of the days of Dan Duran's Great Mexican Adventure, we went down to a city south of where I am. One of my favorite places to go is called Tulum. We went and had breakfast at a hipster Mexican restaurant, and then we went down to this beach area there. One of my favorite views in Mexico. I took Dan to this rocky outcropping. It's the kind of place, you know, Dan Duran loves. He's got a very photographic eye, and he's very artistic. And we had a great time. And as we were going back to the car, I was a little bit ahead of Dan, and we saw the dude there with his girlfriend, and the guy was very friendly. He kind of said to me something like, hey, how you guys doing? And I said, fantastic, sir. I said, how's your day going? And then he said something. And I said, what part of Canada do you come from? He goes, oh, how do you know that? And I said, oh, I could just tell. And then we had a conversation. It turned out he was from Nelson, BC. Girlfriend was from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. So we had all that kind of talk. And then I immediately forgot what he said. And I said to Dan, what did that guy say again? Dan remembered, and I was like, oh yeah, I got to remember that, because it was the quintessential phrase that would indicate you were speaking to a Canadian. And that was on Thursday of last week. And since then, periodically, I've said to Dan, what did that guy say again? And Dan and I have no memory of it. So I
we
said,
take little special moments out of every day to sort of just a couple times a day we'd sit there and just try and
what did he say?
Stare into space. What did he say?
Because
just figure it out.
And I'm going to tell you, Freddie, this is why I want to present it to you and the audience, if somebody can think of it. When I say it was the quintessential Canadian phrase, it could have been, it literally could have been, hey, sir, how's your day going? And he could have said, Tim Bits and a double-double. Okay, it was one of those things where you just know, like it was the kind of phrase that a Canadian, only a Canadian would say, like givener or something.
Yeah, so you want me to come up like?
Well, I just want you to
guess
think
what
about
that
it.
Might be.
What would
but
be the quintessential?
You didn't remember, then Dan remembered, and now Dan has forgot, and then and you both forgot.
And
after
it's been
Dan
a game. Like we'd be driving somewhere and go, Dan, what did the guy say? What did he say, Dan?
Yeah. Well, after Howard asked me that, then I thought, okay, I've delivered, and then I just put it out of my brain, and for the life of me, I can't bring it back anymore.
So you said to him what?
I said, because he was right away, he saw us. I was a few feet ahead of Dan. He said something like, you know, hello, how, you know, good afternoon. And I said, well, good afternoon to you, sir. How's your day going? And he said, giving her on the 72 Team Canada or some, you know what I mean? Like, it was.
Did it include the word like beauty, beauties, anything like that?
Could have been. Could have been, Dan. Could have been beauties. Curling beauties, playoff hockey, I don't know.
Yeah, no. It wasn't as obvious as Howard was making it. I mean, it wasn't like they used like beaver tail.
Howard's only, Dan, I want to remind you, Howard's only doing this for comedic purposes.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. So, yeah, they got.
When I say
about maple syrup, was in there somehow.
It could have been something as quintessential as, how's your day going? Maple syrup and a beaver tail. You know, like, literally could have been that.
Yeah. Ah, boy, yeah. I wish I knew now.
So do I. Like, it could, I keep thinking it was something like giving her.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense.
No, I know.
How was your day going? Giving her? Well, maybe.
Giving her 24/7. I don't know. But it's one of those things between Dan and I, we're nearly 130 years old, so.
The and now we brought Fred into the experience, too.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, but Fred wasn't there to have forgotten it literally in seconds. I forgot it, you remembered it, and that was last Thursday. It's Tuesday now, and it's every once in a while, even coming home yesterday, I was thinking, what was that? I was thinking I was going to ask Fred. And I looked up quintessential Canadian phrases.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What do you got there?
No, I'm just quickly looking, but, you know, the first thing I see is pancakes and maple syrup. But
how's your day going? Pancakes and maple syrup.
How do Canadians greet each other? A firm handshake, eye-to-eye contact. That's true. Always told my, well, Danny in particular, always look someone in the eye when you're shaking their hand. Fuck, I hate it when people don't do that.
Yeah, me too. You know, the other occasion you're supposed to look people right in the eye while the mini ceremony is going on is when you're cheersing somebody. And it's weird when somebody doesn't. Like, you know, you raise your glass. I think you're supposed to look them in the eye. I think it goes back to when people used to poison one another.
That's the clinking part, because you're supposed to swish your glass. The other drink.
But I also think it's that Larry David thing where you look in the eye and go, really? Really? Okay. All right. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, if anyone can think of it, what would be the quintessential Canadian greeting?
Yeah. You know who had a horrible handshake? Because it says here, everything I look at, it says the traditional Canadian thing is handshake, look the person in the eye. Gary Slate had a terrible handshake.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah.
It was like he was laying a dead fish in your hand.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's the, well, you know what? It's true. He had this thing where one of those people who grabbed your fingers.
Fuck. I thought, a man so powerful, not as early, and such a feeble, weak handshake. I felt like saying, Gary, fuck, what's the matter with you? But I thought I better not.
Well, yeah, maybe at that time that he'd given us 5 years worth of income, probably wasn't the best time to go, hey, G-Man, maybe firm that flap, maybe firm up that fish shake you got going there. Maybe firm it up a bit.
Yeah. Things you remember along the way, eh, fellies?
Mm. When somebody shakes my hand, and through no fault of either of us, we catch my hand short, you know, shorter than right in the palm, I'll say, hang on a second, let's try that again. Because I don't want them to think that's how I shake hands.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad we're back to shaking hands, because I'm a real awkward fist banger. You know, just get your fist and bang them together. I still haven't really mastered that.
I don't think that's... I think it's called fist bumping, but I think maybe calling it fist banging is why you have awkward... maybe that's why it's awkward. I'm a really awkward fist banger. Are you? I think we're talking about two different things.
See ya.
I think we're talking about two different things. Yeah, when I meet somebody, I like to fist bang them. Nah, maybe not. Maybe just... How about a handshake?
But you know what I'm saying, though? Are you like I? Because there's always seems to be a hesitancy on one side.
Well,
or the other.
I'm a bit more of a sportsman. You know, I'm on teams, and so there's a lot of fist bumping going on. I fist bumped Dan a couple times, but you have
Why
to know
not just shake hands
because it's a sports guy thing, and you make a good shot or somebody fist bumps you. But what I find awkward,
yeah, that's true. Well, that's when I've had the most awkward, like on a green,
right.
On a golf course, a guy gets a birdie and you fist bump, and it's like fuck. Why'd I do that? Now I feel like a girl. What?
But what I don't like is when, if you don't, because some guys are still high-fiving. Most people around me don't high-five anymore. Most of my golf buddies fist bang, as you call it. But sometimes you'll go to fist bang somebody and they high-five, and now you're fist banging them into the palm, and it's super awkward.
It's like you're playing rock, scissors, paper or something.
Right. But I will say this, I will never not think of it as fist banging from now on.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like to fist bang?
That's right. I don't know about that. It seems a bit awkward on our first date. Anyway, how's your day going? I said, and he said, red, green, hockey night in Canada. Something that was that, my next words were, mm-hmm. What part of Canada are you from? And he got such a happy look in his face, and we had this great conversation. Would you not say, Dan, it was a delightful encounter?
It was. You were delightful. He was happy to talk to you. And, you know, you got into some golf conversation right away. And
I bet you remembered that.
Actually, I didn't. And the reason we got into the golf conversation, which was minimal, was because he was staying where I asked them where they were staying, and they were staying in the complex where the golf course I play is at. I think more of the delight came from the fact that, I've mentioned this before when I'm down here, I always lead with Moose Jaw. So they're both from Western Canada. She's from Prince Albert. And when she said, I'm from Prince Albert, I said, well, I'm originally from Moose Jaw. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. It makes people so happy. Way different than the reaction when I say, well, I'm from Toronto. And they get that sour, pissy face.
Yeah. Yeah, we had one of those encounters down here, a guy from... He called Ontario something unhorrible or something. It wasn't that, but... And that was his opener. And then when we took a shot at, I think it was Vancouver, he got all offended. It was weird. His opener some derogatory comment for Ontario. And we thought, me and Duncan, it was like, oh, looked at each other. That's a bit weird. And then he said something later in the conversation. We took a little shot at Vancouver, and he... literally got like offended, and we thought, you know what, these people can say all they want about us Easterners, but we're stronger, we're tougher, we have thicker skin. We do.
Well, we have thicker skin because most people in the country hate where we're from.
Well, exactly.
Where I'm staying down here, and this is the third trip down, there's a lot of Western Canadians, a lot of Calgary, a lot of Edmonton. And I just learned very quickly, I've mentioned this before, that if I start with Toronto, then there's some kind of conversation around. So when I start with Moose Jaw, there's a real easing of the, because people basically, they go from thinking you're a douche to feeling sorry for you. They do. They go, aw. They do. It's almost like, aw, he's from Moose Jaw. Aw, isn't that cute?
I've noticed down here in Cabarete and Sosua down the road, the Canadians that tend to own restaurants are French Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
So ironically, or whatever the word is down here, there's a lot of poutine you see on signs, eh? Like sandwich boards. Oh, poutine! Because the French Canadians have brought that down here. And I was talking to one guy the other day in Sisua, owns a little place called the Jolly Roger from Montreal, and quite the life. He got fed up with everything in Montreal and the rat race and came down and opened this little restaurant 15 years ago, and he just stands there every day and watches the money roll through. It's pretty good.
And,
pretty good life.
Yeah, there's a lot of French Canadians here as well. I would think a place called Sisumi would be where the Americans go.
That's a little. I like French. Those jokes.
That's I know I like you do. Jokes. I just that's a, I was I gonna like say that's jokes. A little homage to Mr. Patterson. Anyway,
have they done anything with the poutine that's different because it's Caribbean based
or Spanish? Because it's Spanish based there in Dominican.
No, not really. No. Although speaking of like curry, I had right beside us. There's a little restaurant, and I had the fish curry the other night. Oh, it was outstanding. It was this slab of fish, and I forget the name of it, with white rice, and then this beautiful curry sauce on top. So good. I've had a lot of good food down here.
Who mentioned that? Dan, we were talking about that with somebody, or where did somebody mention that? Either you and I were talking to somebody about how many great meals Fred's had in Cabaretti. Where did that come up? Was it with the guy from Canada? The same guy?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I did observe that it's who knew that, you know, the Dominican Republic was the gastronomical center of the planet because Fred's had so many best meals of his life there.
Well, here's the interesting part there in Cabaretti. Again, the climate here and the wind for the kiting. And all the people that have opened businesses here, they're from all over the world, right? Yeah. So there's all different, like anything you want here. There's Thai food, there's Italian. I won't go down the list.
No, please go. List all the meals of the world. Hey, listen, when we were in San Miguel last year, Dan, Fred, and I, and the gang, San Miguel has some, I had some of the best meals I've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
In this Mexican city, north of Mexico City. And again, I know what you're saying, like it seems surprising, but, you know, I've had some meals here in the Playa Tulum area, like that Mexican food we had the other night, Dan, that's the best Mexican food I've ever had. And it's in a little hole in the wall.
We're going to a French restaurant tonight.
Zoom,
no,
zoom.
It's going to be very vicious, as I walk in.
Are you gonna have a nice meal and then do some fist banging?
I just, you know, it's going to be, it's this little bistro with all these little tables, and we're just going to sort of waltz in there, and, you know, there's apparently a lot of duck on the menu.
Oh, yes, the French love the duck.
Not that I'm a duck guy, but I might try it.
Do you guys actually remember?
Nothing, Dan, nothing.
No, I don't remember stuff. Do you actually remember meals of your life, like a whole bunch of, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we do. Have you never heard this program before?
Like the best duck I've ever had was, you know, blah 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 or whatever.
This is gonna be Fred walking into the French restaurant tonight. Waving at everyone. Bonjour, vichy soise, everyone. Then they walk by the waiter and just give him a little fist bang. Bonjour. Dan, I'm more surprised that you don't remember the best meal of you in certain categories.
There's only two that I remember, and really after that, I don't, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd think that all the big moments of your life, or when you turn a certain age or something, that would all, you know, you'd remember that stuff. I don't. I remember the best pizza I really have ever had was in San Francisco, and the best pasta I ever had was in Toronto at a squid ink pasta that I had, but I'd never forget that one. Those are the two things I don't really, you know.
Well, I told you last week I had squid ink rice. They called it black rice with calamari and, or maybe you weren't on then, but calamari and shrimp.
Yeah.
It was excellent. Outstanding. I'll tell you one meal I remember with Darren. I don't know if we were in Greece or Italy. I can't remember. I can't remember that part, but we had blue steak. Have you ever heard of that? Where they hardly cook it. Sear it. Mm-hmm. They sear it quickly, but the cut is so good that it's literally blue, the meat to look at. They call it that. that's one that I'll never, you know, your first few tastes of something, and it's like, I'm never going to forget this. And I haven't, as you can see.
Best pizza I had was with Rachel, XGFR, in Florence. We were there visiting our friend Tim Daniels from Boron One, and one of the nights we were on our own, and she had found the place. Wasn't famous. It was just a well-reviewed, and I it was the kind of thing, it's the first time I'd ever had pizza that had melted, like burrata cheese, like that white cheese on top.
Nice.
Yeah. So I remember that.
Well, you're lucky, because my experience, I mean, I've had all right pizza in Italy, but the best pizza I ever had is not Italy. In fact, Italy for food is not a big one for me. But like the food here is way better than anything I had in Italy. Like just the variety and the quality.
Well, I don't think people, and that's a weird thing about Italy that I found out, because you guys have been there more than me, but is that you're not going to Italy for a variety of food. You're just going to Italy for a variety of Italian food.
Of their food.
Of their food. So just like we started yesterday's show and you had pointed out that sometimes things will just happen. Dan Duran, in his introduction to the program yesterday, mentioned something about constipation, and you said, oh, isn't that crazy? I've just been suffering. I can't remember what Dan mentioned, but it somehow tied into you thinking or remembering that you were going to tell us about your constipation. So last night, on the way back from the airport, I'm like, I was going to be home at 6:30 and make myself some food, but it's like 7:30. So here's what I did. I stopped at the grocery store Plaza, and they've got a pollo ranchero. It's like a barbecue. It's really well made, and they're cooking it while you see it on the spit there. So I thought I'll try it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you've been mentioning that. We went to that place a couple of times together, and you kept looking at it. And once you actually went over and just had a little peruse.
Because they had just opened, and I thought, you know, one of these days I'm going to have some of this pollo ranchero. And for honestly, for $8, you get this quarter chicken, rice, some tortillas and this sauce, and there was onions in it. Anyway, it was really good. I'm not saying that this caused it. My stomach was bugging me a little bit the last couple of days. I've had a little bit of rumbling in my stomach, which I get from time to time. Anyway, I eat this food and it is fantastic. Might be the best rotisserie chicken that I've had here. Not ever, but nice. Here. Really, and the portion was big. And of course, I ate it fast, you know, as I do. I gotta tell you, man, I have been suffering. Like before I went to bed, I spent some time in the washroom. I don't want to be too graphic, but I think we all know the ravages of diarrhea. Diarrhea, let it go.
Diarrhea.
Diarrhea.
Yes, diarrhea.
So that's what I've been dealing with. And what I thought was ironic, because you began the show yesterday with your constipation essay. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the thing. When you come to these places, you don't expect to be constipated. You expect, you know, different forms of diarrhea. Leaning into dysentery. Leaning in to dysentery.
Oh, I'm definitely leaning.
Is there a suppository for that?
No, there's no suppository is going to stop what's happening to me. I woke up in the middle of the night. My stomach was, like, cramping, like, really bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you going to say?
When you get that cramping, you think, you know, is this the beginning of something awful, or is it just going to pass? And more often than not, it does. But I have been in the situation, even down south, not in recent history, but having those cramps, and then it gets worse before it gets better. But
well, I have a system. The first thing I do is I take my Imodium. And then I will, for today, just do the, you know, the bananas, rice, applesauce, tea, or whatever. I think it's tea. I just, you know, I won't. I have a bunch of this leftover chicken. I will not be eating that. But I just thought it was kind of weird. Like 24 hours after you spoke about your malady, here I am.
Yeah. Have you guys ever inserted a suppository in your adult life?
Obviamente, obviously.
No, to yourself, I mean.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Don't get mad.
Come on. Are you kidding me?
You're getting me mad. You're getting mad for me asking that question.
Come on over here.
I think you're very proud. It sounds like you're very proud of it.
Let me fist bang you. I mean, have you not inserted a suppository, Daniel?
I don't recall ever having done that, no.
I'm sorry.
I haven't lived life, apparently. So I haven't had a malady that required such intervention.
Oh, no, I didn't do it because I was sick. I just did it for fun. and it wasn't on that point. It wasn't a suppository. It was one of those Mike's Red Hots.
Yeah. But on that point, this one I had, it was about the size of a bullet, maybe a little, although that's a wide range, but, you know, an average size bullet, and it was made of, like, this, like, glycerin or something. And when I popped in it, I thought, whew, that's not all bad. You know what I mean?
It goes right up there.
Oh, right up there. You know, there's, what can I say? I thought it was going to be worse. It wasn't bad at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
You ask Doll to get some more?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm looking at some right now here on the dresser.
Well, that made me. One. That makes me think of this song by Bush.
All right.
That would have been a great segue back in the Edge days. Well, Fred Sports coming up in a second. Mary Ellen's news, but first here's Bush, Glycerine, Edge 102. In all seriousness, I am trying to remember why I needed it. It was something, it could have been with my stomach, but in recent times I've had to. Oh, no, I know what it was. It was within the last 10 years I had a hemorrhoid.
Oh.
That wouldn't heal naturally. And so Sharif, our Dan and I share a doctor.
Right.
Said I should try the, what's it called? Preparation H. And yeah. So for a period of time, I was just, I think they're glycerine based.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just went right up there. And what happens is it's surprising because it does get sort of sucked up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then just somewhere. It's up there somewhere.
Mm.
Does it fall out?
No. What I did is I squeezed my ass cheeks together and waddled out of the bathroom and then laid face down on the bed.
I think you were expecting something else at that point.
That's when the fist-banging happens.
That's when it happens. You know, that image of you waddling and then laying down face down or laying face down on the bed is one that I'll be with me all day.
You know what I said to Doll? So I go in to put it in, and then I finally walk out. She said, how'd it go? And I said, not very well. She says, what? I said, I can't find it. She said, what? I said, I put it in. I stood up, and it shot out, and I can't find it.
Doll horrified by the image of you.
She immediately believes me, like, what?
Yeah, of course.
And then I started to laugh.
She's like, you prick. No, Dan, it doesn't fall out because once it's absorbed inside your anus canal there, it's sort of almost like an airlock. It gets sucked in up there and somehow the medicine starts to spread.
On this subject, when I down here, a guy I know, I won't mention his name because he might, doesn't matter. Not Doug. Had an anal fissure. Have you ever heard of an anal fissure?
Yes. Yeah.
He had one. He said it was horrible.
You know what they say? Teach a man to fissure.
What do they say?
You know, give a man a fissure, he'll eat for a day. Teach a man to fissure.
But it's a little thing on the inside.
Yes.
And he couldn't figure it out. He had had a history of hemorrhoids, but he had literally had that cut out. And then this anal fissure, something didn't feel right. And he said he went to the doctor. The doctor stuck his finger in. And as soon as he touched it, he almost passed out. The pain was so bad.
Yeah.
So let that be a lesson to you. Don't get an anal fissure.
Well, yeah. If you're down in the Caribbean and you see a boat that says anal fissure, just keep going. I think what it is, again, it's been a while since my medical training, but I think it's like an inside hemorrhoid that gets infected.
It can be caused from pushing through constipation.
Too much pushing, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's review today's program. Hemorrhoids, diarrhea, constipation, anal fissures. When people ask, what's the Humble and Fred show about? This is what you'll tell them.
Let's package a little highlight reel and send it to the little general.
Yeah, he'll love it.
What do you say?
Yeah, what are you guys talking about now? Well, mostly shitting ourselves and fist banging. Okay, Dan Duran's going to go away and try and figure out his lav microphone, and we'll be back doing some kind of news in a little while. Freddie and I getting ready for Bill Brio. Always a great conversation. If you are new to our program, Bill's a longtime television writer, critic, and now podcaster, of course. In the meantime, Friedrich.
Yeah, I was a little not up to speed yesterday. Jay Bondi will return tomorrow, not the retirement Sherpa. So again, tomorrow the retirement Sherpa segment will be Jay Bondi, who's quickly becoming a nice part of the show. A fine young fella. And listen, it's the same thing. If you have a portfolio and you're not quite sure it's performing to the level that you would like it to, all right, they will have a look at it. Yes, they will have a look at it, assess it, tell you whether, you know, again, is it up to speed? Is it performing the way it should? Should you be expecting more? Or, hey, you're right on track, buddy. No problem. Buddy or woman, you're right on track. So, again, if you want a second look at your portfolio, the Retirement Sherpa, theretirementsherpa.ca is who to contact.
If you want something to add to your portfolio, we mentioned that Boron One, we're still involved with that company. And if you want to get involved with them as well, we make no claims about what might happen to their stock price. All we can tell you is there's been lots of news. If you go to boronone.com and click on About... Actually, no, just click on Latest News. It really is something. In the last month, there's been all kinds of things happening. They submitted an application for their exploration license, which is another thing along the way that's going to make this company more valuable than it is to this moment. And as we mentioned many, many times, that you know, very few junior mining companies get to this point, which is to actually operate a mine. Find out for yourself. See if it's an addition that you'd like to make. Talk to Jay Bondi or Tim Niblett or your own Sherpa and find out more about Boron One at boronone.com. This is a little Bush, something called Alien. I don't recall ever playing this, but it's kind of cool. We've got some new transition music we're going to be playing later in the program from our friend Dylan Gray, who performed at our Christmas party and has performed on this program several times. So we'll get to that at some point.
Sweet young woman. We've watched her grow up into a talented young performer.
Yeah, she's very talented, very professional. Yeah. And if I may take 15 seconds and talk about another... sweet young woman. And, you know, we talked, we had Spencer on in anticipation of her one woman show, part of the Toronto Sketch Fest. And, you know, we both, I mean, I'm prejudiced, I'm her dad. You know, you've known Spencer since she was born, but I sent you the video of Spencer's performance. And I just said, yeah, the sound's a little bit, you know, difficult at times because it's being just the mic's coming live from the room. But my description was, it was very professional. And I said to Spencer when I spoke to them last night, I said, she said, what do you think, Daddy? I said, well, first of all, it was amazing. I said, but I wasn't surprised. But it was very, very good. And I'm not just saying that as her dad. It was very good. And she's taking it to New York in April. She'll be performing the same show at a comedy club in Brooklyn. And she's just applied to go to the Montreal Sketch Fest in the spring.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was very cool.
She can hook up with your godson.
Oh, yeah, with Colton. That's
sweet.
And
they
speaking
hang
of
out together, maybe.
Well, speaking of Montreal, and I've been talking a lot about this with my brother, Stephen. Did you, like a lot of people would have heard during the break, that Just for Laughs has filed for bankruptcy protection?
No.
You didn't?
No. Tell
me
about
it. Well, it was a big story, Frederick.
It got by me.
Well, briefly, I want to wait for a bill, but the short of it is they filed for bankruptcy protection. Not bankruptcy. They owe a lot of money. Look it up. Somewhere between $50 and $70 million. My brother is one of the producers for Just for Laughs, and he takes care of a lot of the television.
Wow.
So they will not be doing a festival this summer, which they have been doing for years and years, COVID excepted. But I think it'll come back in some form, mainly because it brings in so much money for the city of Montreal. It's one of it is one of the two biggest festivals that well, they have happened? In that
did
city
run,
every
did
summer.
They run out of jokes or something? What happened?
No, no, they ran out of money, fella.
What? Like, yeah, how does that happen? What?
Well, Stephen, I've asked him, you know, if you're comfortable talking about this, would you come on?
Yeah.
And so far he's not because he's still involved with the organization, but he'll be able to explain it. Yeah, I'm surprised you missed that story. It's a pretty big story across Canada last week.
No, I didn't, Howie. But again, listen, I'm very forlorn upon learning this.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, that festival has broken some of the biggest acts in comedy.
Yes. How often it's referenced by the biggest stars in comedy?
Oh, yeah.
Something. It truly is. Did you ever perform at it?
I did. I, you know, there's different levels of performing at it. There's the galas where all the big stars are, and there's several clubs around the city. And one of the biggest clubs around the city is called Club Soda, and I emceed right there during the festival back in 1988.
Nice.
So, but I, you know what? I didn't feel comfortable putting that on my resume for all the years. Because, I mean, saying you were at Just for Laughs makes it sound like you were at Just for Laughs, like you were one of the big performers. And so, yeah.
Well, that, yeah. I mean, you could, but that shows your class. What that does is show your class.
Speaking of which, at some point, I'm just waiting for Bill to sign in. When we get to our Trump segment today, if we do. You know the story about him or somebody on his behalf telling him, telling the audience at one of his rallies that he beat a couple of pro golfers recently? Did you hear that story?
No.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's part of this thing I've been thinking about lately. Like, and it kind of goes, I was inspired by what you said about Joe Rogan when you said it's like talk radio for stupid people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've kind of thought about that and how all the people in that universe, not just Trump, but in that weird universe, the MAGA universe, how they all are just so comfortable lying and spewing nonsense, bullshit, and fucking lies. Yeah. And I think it's kind of similar to your Joe Rogan theory, and this is what I thought of. It's like they know the stupid people that will believe it.
Yes.
And they know that the non-stupid people who don't believe it, they don't give a shit about them.
Yeah, no.
They're that's only playing for the stupid people.
Yeah, that's got to be Rogan's theory or strategy because I like to see what he was and what he is now. When he comes up on my feet, I don't even like looking at his face anymore. Because if you click on anything, it's just such fucking nonsense now. And he sits there and delivers it in this holier than thou, I'm a know-it-all way. And he's not. He's a fucking idiot.
But even the things
I'm surprised at the people that still go on his show. Like, I honestly, reputable people still go on his show. As a matter of fact, I don't think it was an old show. I think he had Tom Green on recently.
Listen, the people that go on Joe's show happen. Those people, Tom Green, some of the comedians, they're all buddies of his. And besides the conspiracy stuff, he's got a pretty good rep in that comedy world. He really does. He's really a really good stand-up comedian. But back to this other stuff that happened on the weekend. You know, the woman that did the rebuttal with the lying about the rape. And then there's the fucking woman that went on George Stephanopoulos and talked about the rape shaming. And then there's Trump, a surrogate saying that Trump golfed a shot 70 and beat two, you know, tour pros. But the thing is, they know that the stupid people will believe it because they're stupid. Yes. And the non-stupid people, who the rest of us, hopefully, who think it's bullshit, they have no interest in what we think.
What's scary about that? Remember those stories like Vladimir Putin played hockey against the pros and scored like 8 goals or he had 9 hole-in-ones in one round? They throw that stuff out there and nobody wants to challenge it and they believe it. You know, and Trump's obsession with all the authoritarians and the dictators. Do these morons not see the pattern? Like, it's something. Anyway.
It's very similar. It's like Kim Jong-un or whatever, the former guy.
Yeah.
You know, same thing. He had a hole in one on every hole.
Yeah.
Or some nonsense. Anyway, it's time to move on from all this negativity and a little ray of sunshine. Somebody with yes, it's you, mister. Yes, it's you. For many
good morning,
years,
Howard.
Good morning, young man. For many years, this fellow has informed us all around the GTA and around the world about the inner workings of television. As a critic, as a correspondent, now founder and editor of Brio.tv. Let's welcome back to our program, Bill Brio. Hey, buddy.
Hey, good morning. Hi, guys. Hi, Fred.
Good to see you, Billy.
You too.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just like you. I watched that Oscars first time in many, many years. Because your first thing is, you say, the Oscars, what's wrong with me? Am I that old? I liked it.
Dude, I know.
I liked it, too.
I've been such a curmudgeon about it for years. And it just was very entertaining. It was like a really great variety show. It was funny. It was the music. Ryan Gosling, my goodness, what can't this guy do? I just thought they put on a great show.
Yeah, I agree.
But what exactly did Ryan go? I didn't see it. What exactly did he do?
There was this show-stopping production number in the middle of the show from Barbie. He plays Ken in Barbie, and he has this song called "I'm Just Ken," and he started in the audience singing to one of the co-stars of the film,
to Margot Robbie. He started behind Margot Robbie, and she cracked up.
Yeah, it was very cute. And then he walks on stage, and suddenly it's Broadway, and then you got dancers that are carrying him up like in a rave, and the music and the song and dance, and he was just put on a hell of a show at the end. People just leapt out of their seats. It was really, really good.
As far as entertainment goes, the only thing that rivaled it was Jimmy Kimmel's line, "Isn't it past your jail time?"
Yes, exactly. and that was great at
that
the end
moment
of the show.
I've watched it a couple times. We played it on the show yesterday. It almost gave me chills because the roar from the crowd, it was not just a good bit, but just a recognition.
It was cathartic.
Yeah, it was cathartic. Yes, it was a cleansing feeling of wow. Like I've been reading some stuff about it. Like that might be the moment, the turning point for Trump, because the entire world laughed at him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. No, Kimmel chose it. He chose it with precision, that spot, because you had this evening of empathy and empowerment and just positive vibes. And then this crabby old man is like, "Get off my lawn," again with the petty, mean tweet. Really, it was a mean tweet, like on Kimmel's show. And it just was jarring how out of it and negative it was.
And that's the cool thing about it, because again, Trump, you know, tweeting in real time or Xing in real time. And then, as Howard said, coming up with that so quickly and efficiently, and just it stung like a bee. It was fantastic.
Like I think on the heels of the Saturday Night Live, which opened with that amazing lambasting of senator from Alabama, who was the response to the State of the Union. My God, like what a 1-2. But I know that all those messages are preaching to the choir generally. Yep. I don't think it changed a lot of minds. No. But if you're in the choir, you love them.
And they did. There was a couple of prickly moments in the broadcast. And I don't want to get into that because there's been some people pushing back about the Holocaust movie guys, and I don't really have all the facts, so I'll just leave that alone. There was a few people on the pro-Jew side that were a little bit offended by some of the celebrities wearing the pro-Palestinian pins. But that aside, I'm not sure if you know what I'm talking about, Bill.
Yeah, sure.
But the in memoriam part, what do you mean? I thought they screwed it up too, because they didn't take the screen. It was like The shot was weird. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it was like shot with a camcorder from the back of the hall. I mean, it was almost like The other cameras were broken. It was just too far back. And they, right. they designed it. Somebody, they put this together. Oh, let's have the two tenors, the father and son. Let's have a chamber orchestra. Let's have a ballet on this side. And then we'll project on the screen the smaller images of the people who have died. Now, you watch this thing to see who died. Like, it was almost like in response to past criticism where people will always complain, hey, you left out Gordon Pinson or you left out whoever. You know, there was such a post-show discontent about that. Well, you couldn't tell who was being honored this time because if you don't have a 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 inch screen, you probably had a hard time reading a lot of the names. And so I just think they kind of blew that one.
Yeah, what we're talking about, Freddie, is like instead of the screen showing all these names becoming what you saw on television, what you saw on television was as though you were in the balcony looking at the screen. Anyway, it was weird. I got a note the other day from our friend Adam Groh, who's been on our program many, many times. In fact, for Hundy Peas, Adam is the guy that coined the phrase about our show, the part of town where shit goes down. Adam is back. Adam is back on the road, and he's bringing Cash Cab back. That's amazing.
You know, that is the perfect Canadian television show. You got a van, you got a driver, you're driving around, you get ordinary people, regular folks get into it, and there's a camera and there's trivia. So literally, if you have 50, 60 bucks, or you need the prize money, so that's another 100. You know, you could have a television show. You can go to any city. Why did this ever go off the air? It's perfect.
Yeah, the overhead would be minuscule, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, you just need gas. You know, okay, that's expensive. But still, I think this is a great idea. And they're bringing it back in a new music version. So it's on Game TV, which not everybody gets, but that's where it is. I know that it's been picked up by U.S. acts in the States.
Wow.
And they you know, it so the music questions will be what you'll hear, not just not just total trivia. That I'm wondering a bit about, because music crosses lines generationally. You know, like, you don't I don't know what my kids are listening to, you know, or, you know, so you must have a classics category and whatever, but it'll be interesting to see how they do it. But I'm just glad it's back.
Well, here's some trivia for both of you about Cash Cab that I read, that Adam, when he first got the gig, had to actually go and get a cab license. And wrote the he had to write the exam. Well, in order to take people for a ride legally, and he wrote the exam, which had a pass fail number of 75. He had to get 75 in the test, and the pressure was on because they were going to start shooting the first episode the day after the test, so that if he failed it, he was going to fuck up the whole production.
He should have got a Brampton. He would have got it for $50.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, as I sit here in Orangeville.
That's right. What else you got? We got some big shows coming up on Apple TV for those of you that have it.
Yeah, no, I've seen a few of these. There's Manhunt is coming up in a few days, and it's about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. John Wilkes Booth and Tobias Menzies plays Lincoln's Secretary of War, and he's the guy that's sort of the top cop on the hunt for Booth, who basically it's an incredible story. John Wilkes Booth shot Lincoln in the head in a packed theater, leapt on the stage, broke his leg, and got away. Like, he literally got away for like a week and a half or something. Like, it was as if Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't caught for a while, you know. And so it really is an extraordinary story that I haven't seen told in such depth in a miniseries like this, which is a great historical miniseries.
And so I didn't know. I knew that he shot him. So how did he get away with shooting the president and then, like, hanging out for 10 days somewhere?
He literally had one accomplice who held his horse outside the theater, and so he managed to scramble, and he had another guy sort of hold the door open to the back of the theater, and he jumped on the horse and he just galloped off into the woods and hung out in you know, less populated places for a while. You know, and even there were sort of cops along the way who just sort of waved him on. It's quite a story.
Yeah, and it's called Manhunt, so they had to hunt him down.
Yeah.
Manhunt. Exactly. And, and, you know, I guess the, you know, the methods of searching for people back then were somewhat primitive compared to what they are now.
Sure. It was just like, I think he just had some hounds. There was just hounds.
That's right. Basically.
There was only hounds back in those days, Bill.
Yeah.
I saw an ad for this show. And, you know, there are just certain people you instantly think the show is going to be good. Well, for me, Kristen Wiig is one of those people. Kate McKinnon is another from that, you know, that world.
Yeah.
But tell us about this. It's called Palm Royale. And it's not about masturbation, Fred. So, okay, stop it.
Yeah, it's okay. Yes.
Wow. Sound of one hand clapping there. You're right. It's got a great cast. Laura Dern is in it. Allison Janney, Ricky Martin plays a waiter. And it's basically set in the 60s, and it's about this woman, played by Kristen Wiig, who wants to be part of the in society, the elite society in Florida, South Florida. So she's doing everything she can to be part of this club. But it's not, Howard, you expect to laugh more. It's more of a dramedy. It's missing Melissa McCarthy, I think. It's missing one of those other people that just you can't help but laugh. It's still funny. And all, Carol Burnett is in it as an aging dowager who's at the spa all the time, and she's very funny. But you got the two of the great improvisers ever, her and Wiig, together, and they do improvise. When it's down to the Television Critics Association press tour, they were on the panel, and they were talking about how they did obviously let them improvise. Why would you stop them? But people might be expecting another Bridesmaids. It's not quite that, but it's more of a frothy miniseries, sort of a dynasty kind of thing.
Bill, we've been struggling with that for years. People have often said, you expect it to be funnier. It's just something.
How old is Carol Burnett now?
She's 90, yeah, and she's I asked her, you know, talk about, you're on this new miniseries, which she described as like being in a feature film. It was very lavish production. I said, talk about your very first television experiences, and, you know, it was like 1955, you know, she was in New York, she was living at some flop house for actors for $18 a week, and she auditioned for like some big name directors. She had to sing like Ethel Merman and got a job sort of spoofing her. And it was her memory for everything was right sharp as a tack.
I think she's entered that world of her name being tagged with. Is she still alive?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Again, for a moment, I was thinking, is she still alive? Well, obviously, she's in this show.
Yeah.
Canada's Got Talent returns.
Yeah.
When I see that, I just the third season in Canada, a show that takes that type of production, I'm surprised it would survive for a third season.
Yeah, you're right. Often in Canada, you get two shots, and then it's let's go buy something American. But no, they're back, and Howie Mandel is sort of the big face of the show as a judge. Trish Stratus, Cardinal Official, Lily Singh are the four judges. What the difference this season, Fred, is that Rogers has ponied up $1 million. And so that's a huge, like,
what was
prize
the what, for the last? Yeah, for sure. For the first two seasons, it was what, Tim Bits and
Canadian Tire money,
dollars.
You know, a whole box full of it.
Caught my eye too. That it's $1 million. I'm not sure what's the America's Got Talent. Is that prize $1 million too?
It is. Yeah. So this is the biggest prize ever in a Canadian game show. I mean, there was a Canadian version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for four episodes. The highest amount anyone won on that was $64,000. So it's a big deal. And I've actually they shoot this down in Niagara Falls at one of the casinos, and it's, you know, people pack the place. The talent is pretty impressive. It comes from all across Canada, and it's a feel good show, and it's kind of fun.
You know, Bill, we love to talk money and how much money people make on this show. Now, Howie's on the American version. He's got to be paid millions for that. How do they talk him into that? They're not paying him millions. Would they?
Well, he's an executive producer on the Canadian one, so he gets more for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's from Toronto. I think he literally at the taping, if you go to anything Howie Mandel does, There's 45 family members there, right? Like his mm-hmm. literally aunts and uncles and cousins come. I just think he likes to be back. He okay. always would complain, why aren't I hosting the Geminis or the, you know, like I never get asked because I'm the guy, I should be doing all this.
Yeah.
And so I just think he really, really likes to be back performing in Canada.
Well, and he's right. I mean, he really is, when you think about it, one of the biggest, certainly one of the biggest comedy stars, along with Jim Carrey and a few others that Canada's ever produced. But I'm with Freddie, too, in terms of, you know, the guy on, you know, AGT, you know, Stern was making $20 million a year. So Howie would have been making something, maybe not 20, but certainly in the 10s and 12s and whatevers. And then he comes back to Canada where they're not paying him that much. And even with the executive producer back-end money, it's got to be for other reasons because it wouldn't compare in any way to that kind of dough. So good on him.
But don't forget, it's for Rogers. It's free cable.
Right, yes. Right.
All the extras, phones. You get all the Leaf games, you know, the whole package.
You know, there was a time, Bill, you maybe you've forgotten this, when the Humble and Fred show was a very popular radio program, and oftentimes celebrities would come on our show. I remember when a young Trish Stratus.
Oh, yeah.
She used to come on our program quite regularly.
Wow.
Before, during, and after her wrestling career. Yeah. And she was quite fetching, is what I want to say.
She is. She can put me in a headlock anytime.
No, he's right. Yeah.
That woman's in good shape.
No, she's a mom now with some kids.
That's great.
She's great on the show, and she's going to be a guest on the podcast coming up in a week.
Oh,
or
is
so,
she?
So.
Oh,
nice. Looking forward to talking to her, yeah.
Hey, speaking of your go ahead, Freddie.
No, I was saying that Lily Singh, she's a sweetie, too, maybe, actually. Yeah,
she's done very well.
Yeah, she has.
I don't care for the generational quiz trivia show she does on CBC. It lacks an audience. There's something hollow about that one. But she's got, for someone who just started out on her parents' kitchen table doing shtick, she's done pretty good.
Well, yeah, Lily Singh was. Lily Singh is more famous than anybody on the CBC to people who don't know who Lily Singh is. It's, if you don't know, look her up. She has billions of views. By the way, speaking of a game show, I was told the other day, and I can't remember again who told me this. I'll remember that at some point, that your producer of Brio.TV, the podcast, who used to be our producer before he broke up with us, was he on Big Brother Canada?
I joked. I did an intro to one of the shows. I always thank at the end Phil Hong, and I said who came third on Big Brother Canada.
Somebody heard that.
Yeah, it's funny how you make a joke, right? And then it gets taken for. No, I don't think Phil was on Big Brother, but he watched it. I think.
But we would believe that because he's a pretty good big brother. He, you know, he's to those sisters of his.
Well, Phil is awesome.
Now I remember who it was. It was my brother, Steven. He says, I think I heard Bill say Phil Hong got third in Big Brother.
Yeah, that's what happened. It's exactly like, you know, on the Tonight Show, you know, there's all these rumors and truth that came out later that, you know, Raquel Welch was once on Johnny Carson and had a cat on her lap. You know this story.
Right.
Donnie asked if he could pet her pussy, you know, and that, ho, ho, ho. That, and I asked Ed McMahon once about, is that true? And he goes, oh, yes. Ho, ho, ho. I was there. Never. Ed was drunk. Never happened. But it was because they lost 10 years of The Tonight Show. There's all these rumors about what might have been said, and there's no proof to refute it, you see.
Right.
So that's how I guess.
That one, apparently she had a cat in her lap. She said, Johnny, would you like to pet my pussy? And he said, move your cat, and I will. Apparently that was the line.
Which is a great line. It's even better. That's really funny.
And then there was the Arnold Palmer one.
Yes, very good, Fred. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That one's funny. You remember that one?
That one? I think the Arnold Palmer one actually happened.
No.
It didn't?
Did not.
So, Bill, what's the to remind everyone about something his wife warmed up his balls?
Arnold Palmer, here's why it can't be true, because he's on the Tonight Show with his wife.
Right.
No. And so anyway, sitting there, and Johnny's like, asked his wife, do you do anything special before every tournament good luck for Arnold? And she said, yes, I kiss his balls.
Right.
Did not happen.
Yeah, you're not saying that.
No, and then the Johnny, punchline, right, Johnny says, I bet that makes his putter stand on end.
Exactly.
Again, not said, but a great line.
You know, remember how, like, when Carson did once tell Dolly Parton, "I'd give half of your salary to look down your blouse." And that was as racy as you can get in the 70s. Like, yeah. He would have been thrown off the air and beaten with rocks. You know, you could not be that salacious back in the 60s.
Speaking of my brother, you know, I probably mentioned to you that he's been the producer of Just for Laughs television for more than a decade. And I just mentioned this to Freddie. He hadn't heard about the JFL, what do they call it? They filed for
bankruptcy protection.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts about that?
I'm shocked. And what a blow to Montreal. This was enormous. If you've ever been, it's a great, great party in that city on the streets for days. And you see like this world-class comedy and all these clubs up and down and in front of you. Man, it's like sort of saying, well, you know, we're just not going to do the Grey Cup anymore. Like, it really meant a huge amount to that city. And so it's a bit shocking. And this was the sort of stemmed, of course, COVID wrecked a lot of things. So they went 2 years really without really having the festival. But, you know, in 2018, Bell and other partners stepped in and bought it. And it does smell a bit like a cost cutting move in some ways. Like, it's just part of a wave of, we're not going to do this anymore. And I just can't imagine Canada had this wonderful reputation as the host.
Well, I can't imagine it's not going to come back because of the three levels of government, you know, federally, provincially, and certainly, you know, municipally benefit so much from, like I was saying to Freddie, I live there. I've been to that festival, and they have the jazz festival, which I mean is popular, but the comedy festival is huge in that city.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a real shocker. I was really, really surprised. Well, so, yeah.
It would have to be just blatant mismanagement, is it? How does that thing fail? I just don't. The reputation, you know, and the crowds and the, I don't get it, but.
A lot of restaurants failed. You know, a lot. It's just that those 2 years, that really hurt. When the new owners took over and then right away they got a double whammy of nothing, it obviously would hurt any business. So I understand that. But now you can have full houses again. And why would you shut it down now? So, yeah. So there are questions for sure.
Wouldn't that be? That would be like losing TIFF, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Worse.
That's a great that's a great analogy. Mm-hmm. Worse because, you know, TIFF is two reasons. TIFF isn't the same type of festival, and Toronto's a bigger city. There is JFL Toronto, and again, according to my brother, they still haven't made a decision about that. One last television mention for those fans. And I got to admit, I've never seen one episode of Murdoch Mysteries, but what's happening with that aging relic?
Well, it is in its 17th season, Howard, and it's still like the number one scripted show on CBC. They're going to do a musical episode. So, you know, it's been on so long. What haven't we tried? And the cast is a pretty talented bunch. Yannick Bisson and everybody there. And so they're going to sing, "Is this a dagger?" You know, I don't know what they're going to do, but it's going to be a musical version of an episode. And producer sent me a note about it, and he's pretty proud of it. So I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to check it out, but that's the plan. Yeah.
And Billy, I got to say, I was touched by this. When a man actually is willing to have you move on to his street.
Yes.
It just warms my heart. You right here, Fred, there is a house on my street in Orangeville that is for sale.
It is,
and
yes.
And there's a pizza place in town that's almost as good as McKay Pizza, but
almost.
It wouldn't bother you if I moved onto your street,
Bill? No, oh my goodness, it would be great. You know, if my Wi-Fi went down, I could just run over to your place.
Hey, hey Bill, it's Bill, it's Howard here. Give me a call before you make any rash decisions.
Okay, thanks. You know,
just be careful.
All right. Oh, Billy, it'd be great.
It would be fun.
For sure. You guys, you know what you could do? You could get a tunnel between each other's places and then make forts.
We could. Cardboard boxes in the backyard,
TV feeds his family, and we couldn't be happier to have him drop in with us every so often. BRIOUX.TV is how you get a hold of Billy. Billy, always a pleasure, my friend, and thanks for hanging out with us.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks, guys, and have a great rest of the day.
Yes, my friend.
Love you, Billy.
All right, guys. Bye. There's Bill Brio, everybody. Yeah, my Stephen listens to Bill's podcast, and I guess Bill joked him. You know, the funny, I went on Phil Hong's Facebook because I thought, well, maybe Phil did get on Big Brother's. All it is just video from a trip to another foreign country where he, I don't know, anyway.
Right.
One day we'll get Phil back on the program and find out why he broke up with us. Me, mostly. All right. Thanks, Bill. Freddie, let's talk about something else if we can for now.
Well, you know, the Blue Jays are hard at it at spring training. Yes, they are. Their season opener is March 28th in Tampa Bay. And this week, you may have heard, they to a minor league contract, they signed Joey Votto, a Canadian guy that, you know, is really a major league, has been a major league superstar, won an MVP. So that's fun. But looking ahead, what about the Blue Jays and their chances of winning the World Series? Well, look at the Dodgers. They lead the pack at plus 400. So to give you an indication of where the Jays rank, plus 1,200 to win the World Series. So the Jays somewhat down the list, but we'll just keep hoping as we do in Toronto, you know. Those numbers come from Bodog. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling and entertainment, from their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, and feature-rich poker room, to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994.
When it comes to your mortgage, you don't want to gamble. See what I did there? What you want to do is call Mike Kazarian, one of the broker owners of Lender's Choice Mortgages. Independently owned and operated, member of Mortgage Alliance, license number 13582. And why you want to call them is because, as we've been mentioning this year, that plenty of Canadians in 24 and 25 will be renewing their mortgage. And like most of us, I've always just gone to the bank. I'm like, okay, I guess that's how I do it. But you don't have to. They created Lender's Choice Mortgages because they understand that the mortgage application process can be frustrating, and they know how to build a better process for their clients. Lenders want to work with them because of their experience, knowledge, and efficiency that they provide not only to their clients, but also to their lender partners. It makes sense because these guys have been in the business. Kazarian's been doing these mortgages in one form or another for 25 or 30 years. So when he can speak to the people that are going to make decisions, that will save you money. Because they don't just work with banks, they work with 75 different lenders. They shop around for you. And now's the time to have a conversation, even if, hey man, if your mortgage is not up until the end of this year or even next year, have the conversation now. Start building a better strategy that, as I say, will eventually save you some money. Mike Kazarian at Lender's Choice Mortgages. Go to lenderschoice.ca. That's lenderschoice.ca. Illegal fun. Under the sun, boys. All aboard. Yeah, I feel better now, but man, last night I was not very comfortable there for a while. You know. But it's all part of being away this long. You know, something's going to happen to you.
Yeah, very unsettling. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's, part of the territory.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, here, obviously, like Mexico, you don't drink the water. And I was thinking the other day, it's funny how you get this built-in radar or something like... You know how easy it would be to just go in the bathroom and pour a glass of water and drink it, you know, with my B12 or whatever. But something, I haven't made that mistake yet. And people often make that mistake, right? They arrive at a place and they just have a glass of water. And then they think, oh my goodness, I wasn't supposed to do that. And one glass of water in a place like this can screw you up for days.
Do you brush your...
I haven't had that either.
But of course, you know, I brush my teeth with this water.
Oh, yeah, I do, too. Yeah.
Obviously, we wash. Yeah, but we, you know, some microscopic bits of water get in you. I also, you know, wash our dishes with this water and clean out the kettle every morning before I make coffee. The one thing I don't do, though, and I show this to Dan as part of my best practices. When it comes to washing fruit that I'm going to eat, I wash it with filtered water. Just one, one extra step, you know?
Yeah. Same, I make coffee with the fresh water. When we've made pasta down here, though, we've made it with tap water, but it, you apparently leave it in a rolling boil for like over 8 minutes and it's fine. So that hasn't been a problem. We put that to the test and it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I have had a bit of a stomach issue for a few years. And, you know, last year when I was with you guys north of Mexico City, I had a couple of days where it was a bit... Well, actually more. I actually had to go to a doctor and get something stronger than Imodium. But generally, I'm okay. And, I already feel a little bit better today and I'll be fine. I just have to be careful because, you know, like this food I got last night was basically street food. Not quite, but, you know, it's not from a it's just from an open air kind of thing. And it was great. The thing, the drag of it was, I enjoyed it so much. And I was like, this is great. Now I'll be able to eat this.
And what was it? What did it consist of?
It's like rotisserie chicken, but you know how you spatchcock a chicken? You know, you flatten it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's how they make, that's how they put it on their round rotisserie. They flatten it.
And then put it on. Wow.
And so they cook it that way. It was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And then, so it came with rice and it came with these fried onions, which I loved. And it came with this, not super hot sauce, but some sauce.
Right.
And a bunch of tortillas. Like it was really a lot of food for, I don't even know what it was, 80 pesos or something, 100 pesos maybe.
Notice I let spatchcock go by without saying anything.
Well, you know, we're mature in some ways.
No, I know. We're coming around.
Can we go back? You know,
listen, right up until maybe yesterday, I would have jumped all over that.
And I guarantee you there'll be a day in the future when I'll say, somebody will say spatchcock, and you go, spatchcock?
Have you ever spatchcocked a chicken?
That's right. You know, we do that voice as a tribute to our friend Scruff, who all these years later...
Sweet man.
All these years later, lives on in our memory.
Yeah. And I'll tell you with Scruff, you know, as nice as he was to us at Mojo, and he was a good guy. I remember us bringing us muffins in and everything. But in later years, when I was in Peterborough working with his son, TJ, Scruff was around. And man, just a good, solid guy. He was.
I think you and I went to Scruff's memorial together, did we not?
Yep.
In Peterborough?
Yeah. No, it wasn't in Peterborough. It was out like in Ajax or something.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
Darren went. Yeah. 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 And again, you know, there's stories about Scruff and all that shit, but you know what? To this reporter, he was a good guy, I'll tell you.
Well, as well as this correspondent, because in that time of our lives, we were thrown together with a bunch of strange radio people that we had been competing against for years when the company we worked for bought the company that they all worked for.
Right.
And there were a bunch of dicks, and he wasn't one of them.
No, far from it.
Speaking of dicks, getting back to Trump, you know, there's the story of the golf cheating, which I think I've covered basically. A guy came on before Trump, and I don't have the audio, but just... And he was one of Trump's aides who's now... You think, okay, why would this guy lie? Well, now he's running for office as part of the MAGA crew. So by way of introduction, he's talking about what a great sportsman. What a great athlete.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't know if I should be saying this, but recently... The president beat a couple of tour pros who shall remain nameless. Well, I took that clip.
Of course.
I took the clip and I put it on my Twitter feed. And I said, those two pros are bull and shit.
Yeah.
And then he says the president got a shot of 70. There's no way that man could shoot 70 without cheating. There's no, it's not even possible. So why go on and say that? Well, it goes back to this thing I said earlier in the show that the stupid people will believe it, and the rest of us are going to think it's bullshit, but they don't care what we think.
Well, Howard, look at the way you practice. Look at what Trump's schedule has been over the past few months.
Years of that, yeah.
You know what I mean? Over the past few months of what his schedule is, how could he be on a golf course enough to shoot a 70 out of the blue? Like, honestly, how often do you shoot a 70?
Once in a while.
Yeah.
I've shot 71 in the 2 months or 7 weeks I've been here. I shot 71 once.
Well, you're actually a good golfer, too. But anyway, I know. And what disturbs me is more and more and more the way this stuff lines up with the people, the evil bastards that he admires, their behavior.
Yeah.
And people don't see it. Like, how do you not see it?
And as I've said before, there's a great book that Rick Riley, who is one of my favorite sports writers, back in the old days when I would pick up a copy of Sports Illustrated, Rick Riley always wrote the back page essay. And I've read some of his books, and he has a whole book about Trump and sports, and it's called The Commander in Cheat.
Yes.
And it's a great book if you're curious about, you know, just what kind of character he is. And everything you would ever need to know about the guy, like a lot of people I've met in my life on the golf course, is that story. Is the story of him saying he, like, and there's a bunch of links to other stories where he says he won the club championship at one of his golf courses by shooting 67. And to your point, where would he find the time to practice enough? But I would say even if he played every day, that guy doesn't shoot under par golf.
No.
But why perpetrate this bullshit?
Dan, we can hear you. Anyway.
Dan?
Howard.
Fred.
Howard.
Fred.
One other thing. It's, oh, now I've lost my train of thought. Oh, no. How are these people, you know, say you're an independent or you even lean a bit GOP Republican. When you see this group of people that literally sell their soul, sell their integrity, sell their image for this man, you know what I mean? They line up behind him, and they know what he says is bullshit. He know what he stands for is bad. But to get, again, to get that parking spot, to get that paycheck, to become part of that club, they'll say and do anything for him. Can you, I've said it before, can you imagine being their kids? Say you're 20 years old and your dad's doing that. Like, what do you think of him? You know?
I don't think they care.
It's your kid. Like, you know, like you're in your 60s and your 40-some-odd-year-old son sells his image, his soul to Donald Trump. Like, what do you think of him? Like, I can't. I look at it from that perspective, and I... So who wants to vote for these people? Like, they're just weak.
Well, as I came out with this phrase yesterday, the whole group of them seems like they're distorted human beings. Like, it's a distortion. Like, the most recent example that's so bizarre to me, you know, on days after January 6th, Mitch McConnell came on and was like another one of those people saying Donald Trump should be impeached and he should never be held, never be fit for office, whatever he said. And then he retires, a multi-millionaire. And then literally announces his retirement and then endorses Donald Trump.
Yeah. That's why I admire, you know, a lot of them. But that Adam Kinzinger.
And Liz Cheney.
Yeah. But Kinzinger, did you see that clip of him talking about the way Trump smells? I couldn't believe it.
No, where's that clip?
Oh, yeah, I saw it last week when we were off. But he says, Trump, when you get up close to him, it smells like a combination of B.O., cologne, butt, and makeup. Oh, yeah.
Hang on, I got to get that clip.
Horrid. Yeah.
Here's the head. Ex-GOP lawmaker doubles down on claim that Trump smells.
But he says butt, and I'm thinking of... Yeah,
diaper.
Our buddy. Yeah, what?
He says...
Kessler telling us.
Trump smells of armpits, ketchup, and butt.
Oh, that's right. Ketchup. I forgot about ketchup. And makeup, yeah. I forgot the ketchup, of course, because of the French fries, the McDonald's fries.
And the last thing I wanted to mention, too, which I thought was, I was on fire on Twitter last week. I got a bunch of people that responded to this. When Trump, I don't know if you saw this clip, he basically, in order to pay one of his many fines, he went on and was Truth Social and was asking his followers to give him money, 25, 30 bucks. Mm-hmm. But the phrase he used was, you know, I need you to, to chip in. Mm-hmm. And I said, chip in? It's like we're not ordering pizza. Mm-hmm. I said, what kind of billionaire is asking his people to chip in? Anyway, that's all. Yeah, that's all for today's Trump report.
Doesn't matter what he says. There's people chipping in, suckers.
Yeah, man. Dan's back. Dan's the clickety clackety sounds. Did you get the lav mic to work?
No, I think the it needs a battery. That's why it wasn't working. I tried a bunch of different things. So, yeah. But, you know, we'll be back in fine shape tomorrow when I get back to Lisa's place next to Sticks and a Boss.
Nice. And what is your plans? I mentioned that you were probably going to have a nap. One of the things I didn't know, I've lived with Dan several times in my life. Most recently, a couple of years ago, Dan stayed with me through the winter. But I wasn't there all the time. But the last 5 or 6 days, I've been hanging out with the Dan man, which has been, you know, one of the great joys. But I'll tell you this, Freddie. Dan doesn't sleep all that well. Oftentimes, we'll wake up at 3:30 or 4 and then just kind of read or whatever. So it's not out of the norm where Dan, this was last week, we weren't doing the show. But, like, you know, I'd get up and then we'd have coffee and just kind of hang around and read or whatever. And around 9:30 or 10, Dan would just hightail it back to the Dan suite. And I'd be like, what are you doing? He'd be like, I'm going for a nap. I go, it's 9:30 in the morning. But Dan doesn't care. Just go and have a little Dan nap for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I believe in the nap. You know, 20 minutes brings me back, you know, to full strength again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He
needs, I get run down pretty quick. I don't know why. You know?
He needs that 20 minutes to come back to full Dan impulse power.
But to be, go ahead. Wait, just to be fair.
I'm being fair.
No, I know, but you know, you are now in a place. I come from Canada with the humidity, you know, whatever, normal. And there, the dropping in at the heat is 30 degrees every day, crazy humidity. You know, it takes a little bit out of a person, right?
I'm totally getting that. There you go. To be fair, it's punishing here.
Well, that makes sense too, because you know, in Ontario, summers can be very humid, and I've noticed over the past couple of years that Dan takes frequent naps at the Tin Palace as well. I have.
Yeah, and I got, Dan, to be fair, I endorse it wholly. I just, the first couple of times when you went back to sleep at 9:30 in the morning, I was like, oh, well, that's weird. Because I like to have a nap, you know, later in the afternoon. But, yeah, but by the way, and Dan will, if you don't pay attention, he'll be gone for a nap a couple times a day. Just like, where'd he go?
I feel like you're judging.
Not at all. But I'm not
nap judging. You're being nap judging.
Dan, what I'm trying to do, this is a comedy-based program, Dan, and I'm like
he's
one
observing.
Of those.
Observing.
I'm one of those fishermen with a net. I just go trolling through the chum to see if there's some comedy, a school of comedy that I can, you know, haul in.
Yeah. That he's not being judgy at all. He's being observational and, you know. With it comes a couple of chuckles.
Exactly. Relax, that's Dan. It, Dan. Thank you, Fred. Hey, Freddie, do you have some more business to take care of? Because what I'd like to point out is we are going to play. Now, I'm not going to play the whole thing, but our friend Dylan Gray, I mentioned earlier in the program, has a new record out, and we're going to have the world premiere of it. But in the meantime, here's a little amuse-bouche of this talented artist that we love having on our program. In the meantime, Freddie's going to talk about this.
Yeah, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Brett Tyner was on yesterday, and, you know, premiums have popped up a bit this year, but compared to the rest of the insurance world, way down, which is encouraging news for small business. If you become a member of the Chamber plan, you'll know that they go to great lengths to hold the line on premiums, and he talked about that yesterday. Again, very impressive. The Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, you know, over 30,000 Canadian businesses part of this. They've been around for 40 years, and it really is the ticket. Whether your company has one, two employees, up to 100, There is a plan for you. Go to chambersplan.ca today. Click on the badge. Get a free quote. The Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan.
This kid is so talented. It's crazy. Dan, you're making a lot of clicky sounds.
I'll try and stop them.
Yeah, it's okay. We're going to play the whole song as soon as we're allowed to for the world premiere of Dylan Gray's tune. And do we have the name of it? Do you have the name of it somewhere?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to call it up.
I don't have the name of it. You sent it to me.
Oh, no, I know. I sent you everything that
I
had.
Yeah, it says, here's the full song. And I just played it without knowing.
All right. Well, you know, that'll be part of the intrigue. You know, we can make or break artists on this show. You know that.
I mean, I don't see it anywhere in Pete's notes. I don't see it anywhere in your notes.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay.
The fact is, it's good, and it continues to be good, even though we can't. By the way, I'm going to an Airbnb on next Sunday for the last couple weeks I'm here.
Yes.
And Dan, did you see? Dan, I'm getting a weird sound from your microphone. It's like an error or something. Anyway.
I don't know.
Just turn your mic off for a second. I just want to make sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's you. Airbnb just announced that they're banning indoor surveillance cameras. I didn't either. To protect the privacy of guests starting April 30th. Outdoor cameras must be disclosed and cannot point at amenities such as saunas and, you know, bathing areas. But I thought, wow, man.
Yeah.
I don't need any indoor cameras pointed at the How Man for the last couple weeks of March. No one needs to see that.
No. But I saw that story and I thought, well, you mean there were some? And then you start looking around the room you're in and it's, oh my God. But there's probably, the whole world's full of pinhole cameras.
Well, if your Airbnb's got one, they're going to see quite a little thing where you shove the cocktail weenie, up your ass and then lay down face down on the bed. Doll, I'm ready.
Well, it made sense to me to lay face down because that way the glycerin would like flow into my body instead of out.
Yeah, okay.
My body.
You know what? Here's the thing. As long as you believe it, it's not a lie. Dan, are you ready emotionally? I know you've been up. You've had no sleep.
No sleep, no.
And
I'm good.
And you go and you make sure you have a nap today before you drive back to Peterborough, because that's not...
Yeah, I'll try not to nap during this, so I think I can handle it.
Well, a lot of people do nap during this program. All right, Dan Duran's news, everybody.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man. His voice is nice and low. Huh. Dan Duran, the anchor man, comes. As for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care. And his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from the Humble and Fred studios, which are still a viable broadcasting outlet. Don't kid yourself. We need those studios. They are a viable broadcasting outlet. Now with news and views, movie anchorman Dan Duran.
Yes, from Control Central. Miami is canceling spring break. Now, you know, we heard over the years, you know, college students, they get onto the spring break, they go to Florida. One of the top destinations is Miami Beach. And Miami Beach, the city, has had enough of it. So they're breaking up. They even put together a $250,000 campaign, advertising campaign, including billboards that says, basically, we're breaking up with spring break. You know, they've had a lot of problems over the years. How do they do that? Well, they are doing everything creatively as possible. because they've had in the last year or two, they've had a couple of shootings last year, thousands of arrests, 100 guns were confiscated last year. So what they're doing is they're imposing fines on short-term rentals like Airbnb and Vrbo. They're every weekend, Thursday to Sunday in March, non-residents who have cars there, the towing rate will be doubled to $516.
Wow.
They set up a traffic plan that's in place starting at 6 p.m. I guess most of the horrible stuff happens in the evening and overnight. And all the parking garages on South Beach will be closed, so you can't get in or out of them at that point. Some people are still saying they're going, and all you need to do is have a plan to get around it.
Well, I would think that it was, you know, I mean, in a free society, it'd be tough to totally crack down on that. Well, hopefully this will look after the fringe of assholes, you know, that wreck it for everyone.
I wonder what's going on in our society that, you know, because spring break has, it's nothing new here. But if it's getting more violent, or maybe just maybe the number of people going is increasing year over year. I don't know what it is. Well, why would now be the time that it's too much for Miami Beach?
Well, I know they have that problem in Panama City Beach, Florida, traditionally, because, you know, it's in the north part of the panhandle and it's quick for a lot of kids from the states just above that to reach it. And every year, like, the locals there for a couple of weeks, whatever it is, a lot of them leave because of the kids, because of the traffic and the behavior and all that. So,
but I don't think it's anything new.
It's a problem.
I don't think it's anything new that kids have been, you know, misbehaving and wrecking stuff and puking all over places and having unprotected sex, Dan, you know.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Nothing new here.
Although one observation I've made here, second week of March here in Cabarete, it was really quiet. Yesterday on a Monday, it was very quiet, and I thought, you know, people would have arrived on Saturday and Sunday for March break, but it was probably quieter this week than I've seen it since I've been here. So,
and when is spring break? And I know the person I'm renting this from is coming down on the 20th with his family for spring break. Is that around the traditional time in Canada?
Yeah, like my grandkids are on March break this week.
Well, that's they are now. Okay.
That's what got me thinking about it. And then my mind starts to race, and I'm thinking maybe everybody canceled the trips because of the unrest in Haiti. And
yes.
The Haitians are about to come over here and shut down the airport.
Well, let me read you something from Edmonton. What? Steve.
What?
He says, if I were Fred, I would worry about Haiti. No one is in control there.
Right. Oh, super.
And I said, my response was, if he gets kidnapped, maybe you could fill in. He responds, if I would be a little concerned if I were Fred. Now, I just would point out, though, my brother Steven's a bit of an alarmist. I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. He gets a bit carried away because, you know, other than golf, he doesn't have any other hobbies.
So, other than his hobbies being an alarmist then?
A little bit.
I'll just go over to the alarmist store and see what they've got.
That's right. He's very alarmed. JFL, he just sent me a text saying that JFL Toronto has now been canceled too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it still on Sirius XM? Maybe they'll need us back.
That's right. They'll be, you know what this channel really needs? You know what it's missing? Mm-hmm. More diarrhea talk.
But when Tony's on tomorrow, I'm gonna give him that scenario. So what would a Canadian do if all of a sudden? Because they said they emptied like two prisons, 4,000 each. So there's like 8,000 hardened criminals running around that side of the island right now.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If I were you,
what?
If the prisoners get over to the Dominican, I would stop with your little suppository dance. Or you're gonna be fist. What'd you call it?
Fish banging.
Fist banging. Dan, I have a question about spring break. When you were homesteading back in the 1800s, would you guys, when you were coming across Canada on in the wagons,
Covered wagons.
Did you guys have spring break then, or did you just push on?
Well, it was, you know, it was hard labor in those days, so you didn't have a lot of time for, you know, frivolity and fun. You had to dig the fields and move stones to create fences and things, right?
Yeah, you did.
So, yeah.
All right.
I don't know. I like across Canada, to Fred's point, across Canada, the spring break is kind of buried. It's staggered a little bit from province to province.
Yes.
School board to school board.
Okay.
So it's all of March, but I don't remember doing a whole lot for spring break when I was a kid.
Before we leave this program, I would like to have you pay attention to this important message.
Looking for a way to relax after a long day? Tired of being notified by life's bells and whistles?
Yeah, I'm going to need that draft tomorrow.
When you're ready to stop working so hard, you know it's time to play.
Yes.
It's easy to find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Play free casino games, check out our beginner's guides, and get poker tips. Visit Bodog.net today. Hashtag make a play.
All right. As Fred mentioned, Tony Clement will be our guest tomorrow. And then, of course, Thursdays, it's just us and some emails from you. In the meantime, Dan.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. For contests and comments, we read all of our emails, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com, so tell us what you think. And here's something you can do to help us out. Tell your friends, subscribe to the podcast, share an episode, rate the podcast, stars, whatever, you know, smiles. We'd love to have that from you. For Humble and Fred, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, hemorrhoids, diarrhea, fist banging, and constipation. And you'll enjoy every goddamn day. Get fresh flow, pulling out jobs and jamboree handouts. Two turntables and a microphone. Bottles and cans, or just clap your hands, or just clap your hands. Where's that?